Well, hello and welcome to the studios of Bedford Community Television. My name is Ray Chadwick. I'm your host today for this issue of Candidates Corner. This show and others like it are designed by our organization to give the voters an opportunity to get acquainted with the people that they will see on the general election ballot on November 8th. Today as a guest we have Congressman Frank Ginta. Congressman,
good to
thank
see you.
My
pleasure.
You are a candidate for re-election.
Yes,
for
I am.
Congressional District 1. How's the campaign going?
It's going great. I appreciate the honor and opportunity to serve. I feel that my life has been more about public service than anything else.
Yep.
And it's my personal passion. So,
well, you've been doing that since being the mayor of Manchester.
Yes.
And what, an alderman before that?
That's right.
Right.
And I served as a state legislator. And before that, I had my own small business. But New Hampshire is a place where I think most people expect that public service is part of your life. And I've enjoyed it during my time serving the public. And this term has been no different. It's been an interesting couple of years. I know.
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah, from an economic standpoint, I know that there are still significant challenges that the middle class faces, that most Americans face. We think about our kids and our grandkids and what kind of opportunity they're going to have they lead the next generation. And this is the first generation that feels that they're not going to have the following generation be better off. And that concerns me as a father and as a resident of our great state and
sure.
as a member of Congress. So,
well, you know, it's amazing. We've now, what is it, close to 8 years after the economic meltdown of 2007, 2008, which was primarily driven by bad mortgages to begin with, and it went through the system. But from a recovery standpoint, I keep hearing the administration and others say, well, the recovery is underway. But frankly, people are making less. Every job recovery statistic is more anemic than the last. So I can well understand how people are wondering what the future looks like.
Well, those who would argue the economy is doing well lead off with the unemployment statistic in New Hampshire, which is under 3%.
Right.
And while
yes.
that percentage is very low, I look a little bit deeper. You mentioned the average weekly wages.
Mm-hmm.
Today,
sure.
most average individuals are not making any more than they were 8 years ago.
Right.
And with the cost of living adjustments that have occurred over time,
mm-hmm.
it essentially does mean you're making less.
Oh, yeah.
Secondly, the labor participation rate is at 62.8%, an all-time 50-year low.
Right.
So what that tells me is that people have been looking for a job. They can no longer find one,
mm-hmm.
so they leave the
sort of giving up on
the market. They give up.
Yeah.
They give up.
Right.
So, you know, what does that translate to economic output? Well, we've had on average 1% GDP growth under this president. That is
that's
anemic.
Pretty anemic.
Well, it's anemic at best.
Yes, that's a fair point.
I think one of the reasons that you're not seeing wealth promotion and growth of wealth is because we have had fewer 800,000 fewer small jobs, small businesses created.
Mm-hmm. Right.
A small business creates anywhere from 1 to 10 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
That can be millions of jobs, depending on how successful those small businesses are. You're not seeing that under this president and under his policies.
No,
so
true.
I think people are looking forward to this election and would like to close the chapter on the Obama years and look forward to economic growth, balancing the budget, reducing the long-term debt,
mm-hmm.
Revitalizing the economy through a restructuring of the tax system that we have, both residential, individual, and corporate. And I think people are very also frustrated with the Affordable Care Act and how much
so.
We've spent on it and
right.
how little it's helping families in New Hampshire.
Well, it's gotten further and further away from the idea that you have what I like to call skin in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, for example, people are perfectly capable of buying automobile insurance. You go down, you have options, you pick your deductibles, and you just pay for it. But the whole healthcare system, because it's tax deductible only for corporations, it insulates people from the consequences of their decisions. You know, they're not really paying. And frankly, if there were a competitive market, people would pay more attention to it, insurers would respond, and this whole thing, in my opinion, would be much better off.
In addition to that, I think there would be greater transparency in that circumstance. If someone
yes,
else
true.
Is paying your insurance
yeah.
Premium for the most part, you tend to forget about
mm-hmm.
Doctor shopping or
mm-hmm.
or shopping
right.
the different procedures. I mean, when I was mayor of Manchester, one of the things that we did, we had 17 unions. We were trying to find a way to provide accessible and affordable health care,
sure.
But quality health care. So we went, not legislatively, but voluntarily to the unions and said, why don't we put a plan in place where we'll give you the pricing sheet mm-hmm. within the area that your coverage map.
Right.
And you can choose the most expensive or least expensive. Say you need your knee scoped.
So you're talking about like, say I need an artificial knee.
Yeah,
and
anything.
Provider A, B, and C.
You okay. check out the prices,
yep,
and
right.
you can go with the highest price or the lowest or somewhere in between. But if you choose a lesser cost provider, we would share the savings with the employer and the employee.
Yeah, it's a win-win for everybody.
It was a win-win. We saw a reduction. So we saw greater activity from the employee engaged in their own health care,
mm-hmm.
And we saw a reduction in the amount that we had to pay as a employer, which was benefiting the taxpayer. And now the state of New Hampshire is starting to implement that same approach. But to me, transparency is key. Having choice is key, which is why you should be able to buy anywhere you want across the country instead of just in New Hampshire, as you know now.
Mm-hmm.
We're essentially down to one provider in the
Pretty
state
much,
of New Hampshire.
Yes.
That does not give employers or retirees, for that matter, mm-hmm. any kind of choice. And that's what I think is driving the cost of health care up as quickly as it is.
I don't think there's a lot of talk, has been a lot of talk for a long time about repealing Obamacare. That's obviously not going to happen with President Obama there. And depending on how the elections go, that's going to be an uphill fight. Clearly, if Hillary Clinton wins, not if Donald Trump
sure.
wins. But what do you find from the Congress as to any initiative or momentum to actually just fix enough pieces of it to make it bearable?
Well, you know, of course I don't support the Affordable Care Act. If you go
Understood.
Back to
sure,
5 years ago, the president said we want to make health care more accessible and we want to make it more affordable.
Mm-hmm.
Neither objective has been met.
Exactly.
In addition to that, we spent over $1 trillion of taxpayer money mm-hmm. that the federal government didn't have in the first place. They had to go borrow
from China. Right.
So I look at this and say, you know, why would you provide a product or service, have to borrow from somebody else, and then it actually costs you more now to get your insurance? By any objective measurement, if you were investing in that type of business model, you would say, no thanks, I'm going to invest my money
yeah.
elsewhere.
Yeah.
So we've obviously tried to repeal it, over 50 times. We did get a repeal bill to the president's desk, and shocker, he rejected it.
Rejected it. There's a surprise.
So moving forward, it really does. This is why elections matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that if Donald Trump wins, we will have a very different approach to health care. We will remove this top federal government
right.
down approach. We will create a free market system.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have a bridge for those who are receiving benefits under the Affordable Care Act so they don't lose coverage. We'll make sure that that happens.
Right.
But if Hillary Clinton wins, to be determined. I mean, she's mm-hmm. looking to go toward a single payer system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you just ask the average veteran in America, how is a single payer system
That's
working
right.
for you under the VA? They'll tell you more often than not, it's not working in their favor.
Yeah.
So I would suspect that we would try our very hardest to continue to work with whoever the next president is
mm-hmm.
to reshape and reform how we deliver health care in this country. But that's why this election is so critical. If you have Hillary Clinton, you're going to go toward a single payer. If you
sure.
have Donald Trump, you're going to go back toward a free market where competitiveness will bring down cost, will bring down price, and I think improve quality of and access to care.
Yeah. Let's talk about free market, because you talk about it. A lot of most Republicans
yeah.
actually do. And typically you're painted as uncaring, cruel people who are relying on survival of the fittest. You know, we talk about creation of jobs through businesses, et cetera. But I want to talk about that because that is, in my opinion, like your thoughts, the only sustainable way to, as I think Kennedy put it, raise the tide, lift all the boats. So comments on that.
Yeah, look, I think this campaign has been an interesting phenomenon from a presidential perspective. You had Bernie
mm-hmm.
Sanders, who won in New Hampshire, beat Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary.
Right.
Largely talking about a more socialism type
mm-hmm.
of government. That concerns me because we are the greatest nation in the world. We teach our kids that if you Put your mind to anything, you can achieve your goals and objectives. Mm-hmm. And we want to continue with that approach, I think, as the greatest nation in the world. So when you talk about that in the context of a free market system, what it means is that you should be free from government intervention to create a business, whatever it is. And we would hope and expect that with a lot of hard work and some elbow grease, you can make a success of yourself and the people that you employ. So what we have seen over the last several years are the regulatory issues that this president has focused on, because he doesn't have the support largely of the House and the Senate in terms of his approach to governance.
Well, so, not even amongst the Democrats, actually.
No, even amongst the Democrats, he has a lot of, he's isolated in that sense. So he's gone it alone. He mm-hmm. has created through executive orders mm-hmm. or rulemaking through the agencies, $2 billion worth of regulatory requirements. Think about that, $2 billion that is being removed from the economy.
You're talking about the cost of compliance and all these things amongst businesses.
The cost of compliance is about $2 billion. That's a lot of money. I mean,
it's for sure.
You put it in the context of what that money could do in terms of an economic engine if business owners were free to utilize that money in building their own business. You could create thousands and thousands of jobs, and you could see economic growth mm-hmm. rather than at the 1%, closer to 4 or 5% if government just got out of the way.
Right. Right. Well, that's another thing where, you know, Republicans are pilloried about, you know, there's no regulations, you know.
We're not saying no regulations.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
I think what I espouse and what most Republicans espouse is let us know the rules of the game. If you're a business owner, let us know mm-hmm. what the rules of the game are, and please don't change them in the middle of the game, and make them rational and reasonable. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that frustrates me is that this president and his administration doesn't consider economic impact to rules. And I have asked mm-hmm. heads of his agencies this question in hearings, and they don't consider it, which is shocking to me.
Yeah,
if you're a business person, you consider every variable when you are taking a product to market or when you're trying to grow your business. You want to consider different impacts, and the federal government should consider economic impact when writing and implementing a rule.
Right.
Yet this administration is proud to say they don't. That stifles growth, that stifles entrepreneurship. And again, you're seeing it in the statistical data, 800,000 mm-hmm. fewer small businesses created. And if you look at that from anywhere from 1 to 10 jobs, you're talking about millions of jobs. That's the difference between the 1% growth and the 4 or 5% growth that we should be seeing for economic output.
Yeah. As you go around, what are people seeing, and I'd like your opinion, what are people calling the biggest problems confronting the country today?
Well, in New Hampshire, people revert immediately to the heroin opioid crisis.
Right?
This, you know, has taken 439 lives in the last year, and we're unfortunately on track to meet or exceed that number.
Right.
I'm chairman of the Congressional Task Force to Combat Heroin and Opioid Use. I was tasked with the obligation of shepherding through the CARA legislation, mm-hmm. The Comprehensive Addiction Recovery Act. And I'm proud of the work that we did. We had the Senate pass a comprehensive bill. We then, because of our rules in the House, had to unwrap it, give it to four different committees of jurisdiction, 18 bills. Each one passed bipartisanly. The task force had input on every one about what legislative inclusion should be in each bill. We got them passed, wrapped it back up into one, went to committee and conference with the Senate, got it signed into law by the president, and we have started funding it this September. So that's a first of many steps that we need to take.
Right.
But I'm, you know, very happy to say that we are moving the ball forward. Most people appreciate and understand now that addiction is an illness mm-hmm. and that we should treat it as such, and I believe that as well. For those who are in crisis, we want to help them. I have on my ginta.house.gov website a toolkit that you can utilize for people in the state of New Hampshire. And I encourage people to call me directly and anonymously, or if they have a loved one, we want to help. And there are so many people around this area and the state that mm-hmm. are very willing to help try to curb this crisis. So that's the first of many steps that we will be taking, but I'm proud of it. It's something that I was able to do bipartisanly. Good. And we got the attention of the nation. That's the most important
true.
Thing.
Right.
You know, we had 50,000 deaths last year nationwide. And as a result of my interaction as the chairman of the task force, I went to the southern border, saw how the illegal drugs are coming across the southern border. And when people talk about putting up a wall or a fence, I would ask people to consider, if we don't secure the border, how many more illicit drugs will come across that border and kill our friends and family members? We've got to secure the border for that reason, in addition to others that people have talked about.
There's a series of other reasons.
Sure.
That people portray this as somewhat of a xenophobic response, but it's also necessary to interdict drugs, terrorists, a whole set of things. Anybody can walk in.
Well, think about this from a from a human perspective. You have people in Mexico, sometimes children, who are being forced to bring drugs across the border. That is not the way we should be treating
be the way.
Human being.
Right.
So at the very least, think about it in that perspective. Do we want to set a tone where we respect individual life and freedom? And as such, shouldn't we be working with the Mexican government to stopping the drug trade on both sides of the border? But in order to ensure that the cartels don't bring it across the border illegally, you've got to secure that border.
Right, exactly. It's one more barrier to it. I mean, there are other things, you know, other ways I'm sure they'll try, but one has to be diligent about each one. Let's talk about deficit. That doesn't get much play anymore, but we're now well into, I think, $19.5 trillion of deficit.
Of debt.
Of debt.
Yeah.
You are correct. Which is intriguing to me because it's not getting hardly any discussion. So for the average person, they don't hear about it. It doesn't seem to make much of a difference. Things just keep going on. Where are we going on that?
So if your birthday is today and you are fortunate enough to be born today, you are born into $60,000 worth of debt.
Right.
So I want to try to
each man,
put
woman,
it,
and child.
Yeah, let's put it into perspective that people can appreciate. $19 trillion is a big number. It's almost so big that people ignore it. But when I say $60,000, you have a child
start
today.
To think about it.
It's essentially the federal government sending you a bill for $60,000. Mm-hmm. That gets people's attention.
Right.
I was a mayor. I was in business. We didn't run long-term debt that way.
No,
as a matter
no.
of fact, when I was mayor of Manchester, we immediately cut our borrowing by 50%, and I was able to get the Democratic Board of Aldermen to agree with me because we wanted to have long-term viability as the state's largest city. And
sure.
you know what happened? We saw economic growth, we saw tax cuts, and we saw the rating agencies in New York keep our favorable rating ratings because
right.
of the fiscal approach that we took. And then we were recognized by CNN as one of the best cities in America to live in and one of the best managed cities in America. So that's the kind of discipline that we need in Washington. That doesn't mean that you can't provide services that the government is constitutionally obligated to. What it does mean is that we've got to make choices and decisions.
Right.
We've got to be more efficient with taxpayer money, with your dollars. And I tell that to people. You know, we're supposed to be, as public officials, and as elected officials, good stewards of your money. And that means that we should have audits of every single dollar that comes in and goes out, prioritize on an annual basis from zero-based budgeting to what we need to prioritize for that current year. And then we should have a short and a long-term outlook. That's not the way budgeting is working right now in Washington. I feel that people are probably cynical because they look at Washington and say they play by their own rules. But the rest of us have to play by the real set
right,
of rules.
The real world.
And that is rightfully so frustrating to every American. So I've set out to try to change that. I got added to the budget committee this year. I found $60 billion in cuts immediately, required a balanced budget amendment to the budget process so we can start to rein in the short-term deficit, which is about $430 billion.
Right.
And then you can get to the long-term debt of $19 trillion.
Yeah, you got to pay it down. That's the only
you've got to pay it. There's
way.
No question. You have to pay it down. Otherwise, we're going to go by the likes of Greece and other countries
sure.
that have financial instability. We do not want to see that for the United States of America.
Well, the other thing is various. I think the right word is entitlements, but obligations: Social Security, Medicare, et cetera, et cetera. And those are, they say, solvent today, but they're basically solvent because they have government IOUs, and the government can't pay them without being in default anyway. So
both,
fix those.
Yeah, both Social Security and Medicare are insolvent within the 20-year window if something is not done.
Right.
And I want to be clear. I think these are programs that people rely on that should continue and that should be strengthened.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to protect them. We want to preserve them. But we also want to make sure that we have programs for future recipients, not existing recipients, but future recipients, that is in line with what is happening today. You know, for example,
longevity.
Longevity, but 50 years ago, you didn't have the same access to investment products that you do today.
Right.
And most people, unfortunately, were passing at an early age. So Social Security started around the time you were about to pass.
Yeah.
Today, people are living, thankfully, into their 80s
and
their 90s,
right.
And hopefully beyond, as science and technology changes on a such a rapid basis. And that's a good problem to have. But we have to create an environment where those programs are fiscally solvent. The funded liabilities that the U.S. has is over $100 trillion.
Right.
So when you add that to the $19 trillion in debt, again, if you were in business and you started to look at your liabilities and your unfunded liabilities,
exactly.
you would start to say, if you were an executive team, we've got to make some changes here.
Yep.
So the executive team, you know, we have an opportunity to change that November 8th and make sure that we have people who are fiscally sound and thoughtful, but also respectful of the obligations that we have in terms of services at the federal level.
Yeah, I don't think it's fair or right to just keep on the status quo when you know it's heading for a huge default.
Right, I completely
agree. It's got to be fixed up. Let's talk a little bit about the Middle East, terrorism, those kinds of things. That is, I think, going to be an increasing impact on us unless we take a different tack. Not sure what that is, but the efforts of this administration to, as I would see it, retract itself from those problems haven't helped.
Yeah, I think the president has made some mistakes relative to drawing a line in the sand with Syria, allowing Russia to invade. Well,
right.
sure, and then just walking away from it, allowing Russia to invade Crimea, the deal with Iran that has clearly, I think, been a negative for the United States. You know, we saw that Iran got cash payments from this president.
Yeah, we saw that, right.
And we found that out after
plane
the fact.
Plane load of it.
Well, you know, look, we have a process by which we make payments and for the federal government. And and the purpose of that is so you can track where those dollars go. Well, that's why we use an electronic payment system.
Right.
Iran demanded cash. And the reason they demanded cash is they wanted to take that cash and disguise what they were going to do with it. And our fear and concern is that the bulk of it went to terrorist organizations that they support that want to kill Americans. So I think the president made a grave mistake. I think Secretary Kerry made a grave mistake. And I think the country's paying for it. You're seeing now ISIS is infiltrating not just the region, but Europe and now the United States.
Very true.
And we have, according to the FBI director, open cases in all 50 states in the country. That doesn't necessarily mean something's going to happen in every in every state, but it does mean that the FBI is taxed.
Is paying attention.
Well, they're very concerned with what's going on. And you know the what happened in Orlando, for example, 49 people died, and it never should have happened. So we've got to be vigilant as the United States. We've got to lead the world. We've got to expect that our allies will get much more engaged in this fight. And we have to admit that we are in a fight with terrorists who want to do nothing but not just disrupt but kill now Europeans and Americans. That can't be what is the norm for the next 50 years.
No.
So we've got to have a president who will be concise, who will be thoughtful about what the plan and approach is, and then Congress, once briefed, would assuming it approves of the plan, would then fund that plan. But we're not seeing it from this president. And quite frankly, I hope in the final month of the presidential campaign that we get to more policy-based issues rather than some of the things that you've been seeing, because we've got a very important and serious
stuff on
choice
the table
to make.
Here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. It's amazing to me that the frivolity, if you will, you know, personal this and that, that are passing for serious discussion about the future of the country, because if you look at the debt, if you look at the way we've conducted ourselves in the Middle East, walking away from Iraq, etc., these are all things that will impact us for generations. And I think it's time for a much more serious kind of debate there. When you get back down to Washington, assuming all goes well on November 8th, what do you plan to be focusing on in the next 2 years?
Well, I want to continue my work as chairman of the Congressional Task Force. I mm-hmm. think that has produced real results. The CARA legislation is $192 million mm-hmm. a year for each of the next 5 years, and that's step one, but we've got a lot more work to do in that arena. Secondly, I think we've got to grow the economy, which means we need to absolutely update our tax code, both on the individual side and on
right.
the business side.
Corporate side.
Well, we're lacking, mm-hmm. you know. We're 35% at our corporate rate. You're seeing companies like Apple continue to go overseas.
Sure.
And they're doing roughly $7 billion with a B in net profits overseas per quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Not per year, per quarter. Think about if that money was repatriated back
yeah.
to the U.S. and we're talking
here.
Just one company
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
But what that could do, again, for the Treasury and for job creation here in America.
Mm-hmm.
So my estimation is that if we repatriated, we could almost eliminate the existing deficit.
Yeah.
And then you create a tax code that's more competitive, probably around that 15% level, and you would actually see more revenue, not less. And
well, that's
more
been proven several
yes.
times. You know, we're about running out of time here. This has flown back so quickly. Why don't you take a minute and tell the voters in Bedford and beyond exactly why they should send you back for another round? It's
sure.
your camera right here. And
well, and thanks for having me on, Ray. I want to thank the people of Bedford for placing in me the ability and willingness to serve as your representative to Washington, D.C. This last term, I've served on the Financial Services Committee, the Budget Committee, and chairman of the Congressional Task Force to Combat the Heroin and Opioid Crisis. And we've made significant inroads in a bipartisan way to make that happen for our friends and neighbors around the state. But I want to continue in that effort. I believe in free markets and limited government, in making sure that every taxpayer dollar is accounted for. And I want to make sure that we grow the economy for our kids and for our grandkids' future. But this election is a serious one. You have a choice in November between myself, Carol Shea Porter, who's been running for 10 years now, and a former Democrat, Sean O'Connor, who was in the Democratic primary, but was unfortunately essentially kicked away from the Democratic primary from the Democratic leaders and is now running as an independent in November. But he identifies himself as the true progressive in this race and a Bernie Sanders endorser. So there is a choice between myself and Sean O'Connor and Carol Shea Porter. I hope that I can earn your support again and continue the very good work that we've been able to achieve over this last term.
Well, Frank, thank you for coming
Thanks
in today. This has worked out very well. Well, I wish you all the best of luck on November 8th, and I'm sure you'll do a fine job there and a fine job for Washington in Washington again. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for watching today. November 8th is the general election. Make your vote count, and have a good day.